Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 370, titled Dutch Treat, More on the Bush-Tietzen-Dutch Money Connection. And in turn, this is a broadcast that takes a look at some of the historical tributaries running through Lugano, Switzerland, in light of the fact that Lugano is the home not only to the Altaqua / Banco del Gottardo milieu that we've looked at in the past in connection with the alleged funding of September 11th and Al-Qaeda, but in turn, the fact that, the fact that Lugano, Switzerland is also the epicenter for the Dutch-based Thyssen Bornemisza branch of the post-war Thyssen operations, which in turn are inextricably linked with the Nazi flight capital program that has bankrolled what I call the Underground Reich, quite literally a Third Reich in exile, underground. But in turn, the Dutch connection to the Thyssen Bornemisza empire appears to be the pivot point for the post-war Thyssen financial interests, and as we shall see here, those interests ultimately were to coalesce in that portion of the Bush industrial and financial empire that went to fund the operations of George Herbert Walker Bush, the business operations, that is, and which in turn were placed into a blind trust in 1980 for his son, the current president of the United States. We're reviewing in some cases, and also reading for the first time for many listeners, some aspects of the Dutch connection to the Bush-Tietzen Empire. This is from an article called How the Bush Family Made Its Fortune from the Nazis. It's authored by John Loftus, and it is in turn accessed from John Loftus's website at www.johnloftus.com/TTson.htm. And in turn, this article was initially published on a website run by Robert Letterman, a writer out of the Philadelphia area. Now, after discussing Paul Manning's manuscript, namely Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and after distancing himself somewhat from the Martin Bormann aspect of Paul Manning's investigation, this article by John Loftus, again, co-author of The Secret War Against the Jews, an individual whose previous security clearances are discussed on his website, John Loftus went on to, in turn, reveal the investigations of William Gowan, a former U.S. intelligence agent whose father had been a diplomatic emissary of President Franklin Roosevelt to the Vatican. And in turn, William Gowan was to reveal the extent to which the Bank for Handel and Scheepvaart, the Dutch branch of the Thyssen Empire, was in turn the money laundering pivot for the post-war interests of the Thyssens on behalf of the Underground Reich. And as we will see, not only has that connection and the connections to the Bushes and the Union Banking Corporation in New York, not only has that been a focal point of interest by a number of investigators, but at least two, the Dutch manager of the Bank for Handel and Scheepvaart, and later a Dutch journalist in 1996, were investigating this connection and died under somewhat ambiguous circumstances, the better part of 50 years apart. After discussing Paul Manning's uncovering of the Dutch connection to the Thyssen Empire, and after discussing the fact that Allied investigators had been unable to pry the secret about the Dutch connection to what I'm about to read, John Loftus goes on to write as follows in his article, again, How the Bush Family Made Its Fortune from the Nazis. And again, this is published on John Loftus's website. We continue. And so the Dutch connection remained unexplored until 1994, when I published the book The Secret War Against the Jews. As a matter of historical curiosity, I mentioned that Fritz Thyssen and, indirectly, the Nazi Party had obtained their early financing from Brown Brothers Harriman and its affiliate, the Union Banking Corporation. Union Bank, in turn, was the Bush family's holding company for a number of other entities, including the Holland American Trading Company. By the way, this discussed in, among other programs, for the record, the Bush-Nazi connections, the Bush family, Thyssen/Nazi connections, discussed in, among other programs, for the record, 186, 248, 273, 278, and in number 361 as well. Continuing with the discussion of the Dutch connection to the Thyssen Empire and, in turn, to the Bushes, it was a matter of public record that the Bush holdings were seized by the U.S. government after the Nazis overran Holland. In 1951, the Bushes reclaimed Union Bank from the U.S. alien property custodian along with their, quote, neutral, unquote, Dutch assets. I did not realize it at the time, but I had stumbled across a very large piece of the missing Dutch connection. Bush's ownership of the Holland American Investment Company was the missing link to Manning's earlier research on the Thiessen investigative files. In 1981, Manning had written, quote, Thiessen's first step in a long dance of tax and currency frauds began in the late 1930s when he disposed of his shares in the Dutch Hollandische Amerikanische Investment Corporation to be credited to the Bank voor Handel en Scheepvaart, N.V. Rotterdam, the bank founded in 1916 by August Thiessen, Sr. Unquote. In this one obscure paragraph in a little-known book, Manning had unwittingly documented two intriguing points. One, the Bush's Union Bank had apparently bought the same corporate stock that the Thiessens were selling as part of their Nazi money laundering. And two, the Rotterdam Bank, far from hindsight, Manning and I had uncovered different ends of the Dutch connection. After reading the excerpt in my book about the Bush's ownership of the Holland American Trading Company, retired U.S. intelligence agent William Gowan began to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Mr. Gowan knew every corner of Europe from his days as a diplomat's son, an American intelligence agent, and a newspaper man. William Gowan deserves sole credit for uncovering the mystery of how the Nazi industrialists hid their money from the Allies at the end of World War II. In 1999, Mr. Gowan traveled to Europe and at his own expense to meet a member of Dutch intelligence who had detailed inside information about the Rotterdam Bank. One more time. In 1999, Mr. Gowan traveled to Europe at his own expense to meet a former member of Dutch intelligence who had detailed inside information about the Rotterdam Bank. The scrupulous Gowan took a written statement and then had his source read and correct it for error. Here, in summary form, is how the Nazis hid their money in America. After World War I, August Thiessen had been badly burned by the loss of assets under the harsh terms of the Versailles Treaty. He was determined that it would never happen again. One of his sons would join the Nazis, the other would be neutral. No matter who won the next war, the Thiessen family would survive with their industrial empire intact. Fritz Thiessen joined the Nazis in 1923. His younger brother married into Hungarian nobility and changed his name to Baron Thiessen Bornemisza. The Baron later claimed Hungarian as well as Dutch citizenship. In public, he pretended to detest his Nazi brother, but in private they met at secret board meetings in Germany to coordinate their operations. If one brother were threatened with loss of property, he would transfer his holdings to the other. To aid his sons in their shell game, August Thiessen had established three different banks during the 1920s. The August Thiessen Bank in Berlin, the Bank voor Handel en Scheepvaart in Rotterdam, and the Union Banking Corporation in New York City. To protect their corporate holdings, all the brothers had to do was to move the corporate paperwork from one bank to the other. This they did with some regularity. When Fritz Thiessen sold, unquote, the Holland American Trading Company for a tax loss, the Union Banking Corporation in New York bought the stock. Similarly, the Bush family invested the disguised Nazi profits in American steel and manufacturing corporations that became part of the secret Thiessen Empire. When the Nazis invaded Holland in May of 1940, they investigated the Bank voor Handel en Scheepvaart in Rotterdam. Fritz Thiessen was suspected by Hitler's auditors of being a tax fraud and of illegally transferring his wealth outside the Third Reich. The Nazi auditors were right. Thiessen felt that Hitler's economic policies would dilute his wealth through ruinous war inflation. He had been smuggling his war profits out through Holland, but the Rotterdam vaults were empty of clues as to where the money had gone. The Nazis did not know that all of the documents evidencing secret Thiessen ownership had been quietly shipped back to the August Thiessen Bank in Berlin under the friendly supervision of Baron Kurt von Schroeder. Thiessen spent the rest of the war under VIP house arrest. He had fooled Hitler, hidden his immense profits, And now, it was time to fool the Americans with the same shell game. By the way, I would note that as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record 305, Fritz Thiessen was very, very close to Martin Bormann, who in turn maintained his closeness to not only Count Federico Zichy Thiessen, but also to Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza. Continuing. As soon as Berlin fell to the Allies, it was time to ship the documents back to Rotterdam so that the neutral, unquote, bank could claim ownership under the friendly supervision of Alan Dulles, who, as the OSS intelligence chief in 1945 Berlin, was well-placed to handle any troublesome investigations. Unfortunately, the August Thiessen Bank had been bombed during the war, and the documents were buried in the underground vaults beneath the rubble. Worse, the vaults lay in the Soviet zone of Berlin. Now, we're going to touch on the operations here of Prince Bernhard Zudippa von Biesterfeld, who married Queen Juliana of the Netherlands. As we've noted in numerous past broadcasts, Prince Bernhard had not only been a major in the SS, but was also associated with the Berlin NW7 operations of IG Farben, which was responsible for handling many IG intelligence operations on behalf of the Third Reich. So note here that Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands had not only been an SS officer, but who had been a spy with a key branch of IG Farben, the Nazi chemical cartel. Note that Prince Bernhard here is basically going to be operating on behalf of the Underground Reich. Turning once again to Loftus's paper. According to Gowan's source, Prince Bernhard commanded a unit of Dutch intelligence which dug up the incriminating corporate papers in 1945 and brought them back to the Neutral Bank in Rotterdam. The pretext was that the Nazis had stolen the crown jewels of his wife, Princess Juliana, and that the Russians gave the Dutch permission to dig up the vault and retrieve them. Operation Juliana was a Dutch fraud on the Allies who searched high and low for the missing pieces of the Thiessen fortune. In 1945, the former Dutch manager of the Rotterdam Bank resumed control, only to discover that he was sitting on a huge pile of hidden Nazi assets. In 1947, the manager threatened to inform Dutch authorities and was immediately fired by the Thiessens. The somewhat naive bank manager then fled to New York City, where he intended to talk to Union Bank director Prescott Bush. As Gowan's Dutch source recalled, the manager intended, quote, to reveal to Prescott Bush the truth about Baron Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza and the Rotterdam Bank, in order that some or all of the Thiessen interests in the Thiessen Group might be seized and confiscated as German enemy property. Quote, the manager's body was found in New York 2 weeks later. By the way, this was in 1947. And indeed, there was a similar timely death, this one almost 40 years later. Loftus goes on to relate. Similarly, in 1996, a Dutch journalist, Eddie Rover, R-O-E-V-E-R, went to London to interview the Baron, who at the time was neighbors with Margaret Thatcher. Rover's body was discovered 2 days later. Perhaps, Gowan remarked dryly, it was only a coincidence that both healthy men had died of heart attacks immediately after trying to uncover the truth about the Thiessens. And I would note that these two heart attacks were in 1947 and 1996, both after World War II, one of them more than a half century after World War II. Continuing. Neither Gowan nor his Dutch source knew about the corroborating evidence in the Alien Property Custodian archives, or in the American Military Government of Germany, U.S. archives. Together, the two separate sets of U.S. files overlap each other and directly corroborate Gowan's source. The first set of archives confirms absolutely that the Union Banking Corporation in New York was owned by the Rotterdam Bank. The second set, quoted by Manning, confirms that the Rotterdam Bank was in turn owned by the Thiessens. It is not surprising that these two American agencies never shared their Thiessen files. As the noted historian Burton Hirsch documented, quote, the alien property custodian Leo Crowley was on the payroll of New York J. Henry Schroeder Bank, where Foster and Alan Dulles both sat as board members. Foster arranged an appointment for himself as special legal counsel for the alien property custodian, while simultaneously representing German interests against the custodian, unquote. No wonder Alan Dulles had sent Paul Manning on a wild goose chase to South America. He, Manning, was very close to uncovering the fact that the Bush's bank in New York City was secretly owned by the Nazis before, during, and after World War II. once again, this last sentence, because it's a critical one. He, Manning, was very close to uncovering the fact that the Bush's bank in New York City was secretly owned by the Nazis before, during, and after World War II. Once Thiessen ownership of the Union Banking Corporation is proven, it makes out a prima facie case of treason against the Dulles and Bush families for giving aid and comfort to the enemy in time of war. The first key fact to be proven in any criminal case is that the Thiessen family secretly owned the Bush's bank. Apart from Gowan's source and the Twin American files, a third set of corroboration comes from the Thiessen family themselves. In 1979, the present Baron Thiessen Bornemisza, Fritz Thiessen's nephew, prepared a written family history to be shared with his top management. A copy of this 30-page tome entitled The History of the Thiessen Family and Their Activities, unquote, was provided by Gowan's source. It contains the following Thiessen admissions, quote, "Thus, at the beginning of World War II, the Bank for Handel and Scheepvaart had become the holding of my father's companies, a Dutch firm whose only shareholder was a Hungarian citizen. Prior to 1929, it held the shares of the August Thiessen Bank and also American subsidiaries and the Union Banking Corporation, New York. The shares of all the affiliates were in 1945 with the August Thiessen Bank in the eastern sector of Berlin, from where I was able to have them transferred to the west at the last moment," unquote. Again quoting, "After the war, the Dutch government ordered an investigation into the status of the holding company and, pending the result, appointed a Dutch former general manager of my father who turned against our family. In that same year, 1947, I returned to Germany for the first time after the war, disguised as a Dutch driver in military uniform to establish contact with our German directors," unquote. The situation of the group gradually began to be resolved, but it was not until after 1955 that the German companies were freed from Allied control and subsequently disentangled. Fortunately, the companies in the group suffered little from the dismantling. At last, we were in a position to concentrate on purely economic problems, the reconstruction and extension of the companies, and the expansion of the organization," unquote. Again quoting from the Thiessen documents, "The banking department of the Bank for Handel and Scheepvaart, which also functioned as the group's holding company, merged in 1970 with Nederlandse Kreditbank NV, which increased its capital. The group received 25%. The Chase Manhattan Bank holds 31%. By the way, that's one of the banks with which Martin Bormann had with the New York branch of which Martin Bormann had a demand account. Continuing with the Thiessen documents, "The name Thiessen Bornemisza Group was selected for the new holding company. Thus, the twin U.S. archives, Gowan's Dutch source, and the Thiessen family history all independently confirm that President Bush's father and grandfather served on the board of a bank that was secretly owned by the leading Nazi industrialists. The Bush connection to these American institutions is a matter of public record. What no one knew until Gowan's brilliant research opened the door was that the Thiessens were the secret employers of the Bush family. But what did the Bush family know about their Nazi connection, and when did they know it? As senior managers of Brown Brothers Harriman, they had to have known that their American clients, such as the Rockefellers, were investing heavily in German corporations, including Thiessen's giant Vereinigte Stahlwerke. As noted historian Christopher Simpson repeatedly documents, it is a matter of public record that Brown Brothers' investments in Nazi Germany took place under the Bush family stewardship. When war broke out, was President Bush stricken with a case of Waldheimer's disease, a sudden amnesia about his Nazi past? Or did he really believe that our friendly Dutch allies owned the Union Banking Corporation and had its parent bank and its parent bank in Rotterdam? It should be recalled that in January of 1937, he, Prescott Bush, hired Alan Dulles to cloak his accounts. But cloak from whom? Did he expect that happy little Holland was going to declare war on America? That cloaking operation, run for Bush by Alan Dulles, only makes sense in anticipation of a possible war with Nazi Germany. If Union Bank was not the conduit for laundering the Rockefellers' Nazi investments back to America, then how could the Rockefeller-controlled Chase Manhattan Bank end up owning 31% of the Thiessen Group after the war? It should be noted that the Thiessen Group, TBG, is now the largest industrial conglomerate in Germany and with a net worth of more than $50 billion, one of the wealthiest corporations in the world. TBG is so rich it even bought out the Krupp family, famous arms makers for Hitler, leaving the Thiessens as the undisputed champion survivors of the Third Reich. Where did the Thiessens get the startup money to rebuild their empire with such speed after World War II? The enormous sums of money deposited into the Union Bank prior to 1942 is the best evidence that Prescott Bush knowingly served as a money launderer for the Nazis. Remember that Union Bank's books and accounts were frozen by the U.S. Alien Property Custodian in 1942 and not released back to the Bush family until 1951. At that time, Union Bank shares representing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of industrial stocks and bonds were unblocked for distribution. Did the Bush family really believe that such enormous sums came from Dutch enterprises? One could sell tulip bulbs and wooden shoes for centuries and not achieve those sums. A fortune this size could only have come from the Thiessen profits made from rearming the Third Reich and then hidden, first from the Nazi tax auditors and then from those of the Allies. The Bushes knew perfectly well that Brown Brothers was the American money channel into Nazi Germany, and that Union Bank was the secret pipeline to bring the Nazi money back to America from Holland. The Bushes had to have known how the secret money circuit worked because they were on the board of directors in both directions. Brown Brothers out, Union Bank in. Moreover, the size of their compensation is commensurate with their risk as Nazi money launderers. In 1951, Prescott Bush and his father-in-law each received one share of Union Bank stock worth $750,000 each. $1.5 million was a lot of money in 1951, but then, from the Thiessen point of view, buying the Bushes was the best bargain of the war. The bottom line is a harsh one. It is bad enough that the Bush family helped raise the money for Thiessen to give Hitler his start in the 1920s, but giving aid and comfort to the enemy in time of war is treason. The Bush's bank helped the Thiessens make the Nazi steel that killed Allied soldiers. As bad as financing the Nazi war machine may seem, aiding and abetting the Holocaust was worse. The Thiessens' coal mines used Jewish slaves as if they were disposable chemicals. There are 6 million skeletons in the Thiessen family closet, and a myriad of criminal and historical questions to be answered about the Bush family's complicity. And again, it is still more interesting in light of the fact that Lugano, Switzerland, is also the epicenter for the operations of Youssef Nada and Altaqua Management. Now, there is yet another discussion here of some of the Bush family holdings on behalf of the Third Reich, and this concerns the Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation and Upper Silesian Coal and Steel Company, and we're going to take a look at their complicity with some of the slave labor camps that were set up outside of Auschwitz. This also is on John Loftus's website. This is an article originally published in Clamor magazine by author Toby Rogers. It's called Heir to the Holocaust. This also is on John Loftus's website at www.johnloftus.com/Thiessen.htm. And skipping ahead into this particular article in discussion of one of the Bush family Thiessen/Third Reich holdings, namely the Silesian American Corporation or Consolidated Steel Corporation, part of the Union Banking Corporation and Harriman 15 assets that were cloaked for the Bush family on behalf of the Third Reich by Alan Dulles. Toby Rogers writes, on March 19, 1934, Prescott Bush handed Averell Harriman a copy of that day's New York Times. The Polish government was applying to take over Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation and Upper Silesian Coal and Steel Company from, quote, German and American interests, unquote, because of rampant, quote, mismanagement, excessive borrowing, fictitious bookkeeping, and gambling in securities, unquote. Sounds like recent headlines here in the United States. Continuing. The Polish government required the owners of the company, which accounted for over 45% of Poland's steel production, to pay at least its full share of back taxes. Bush and Harriman would eventually hire attorney John Foster Dulles to help cover up any improprieties that might arise under investigative scrutiny. Hitler's invasion of Poland in 1939 ended the debate about Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation and Upper Silesian Coal and Steel Company. The Nazis knocked the Polish government off of Thyssen, Fleek, and Harriman Steel Company and were planning to replace the paid workers. Originally, Hitler promised Stalin that they would share Poland, that the two countries would share Poland, and use Soviet prisoners as slaves in Polish factories. Hitler's promise never actually materialized, and he eventually invaded Russia. Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation was located near the Polish town of Oswiecim, one of Poland's richest mineral regions. That was where Hitler set up the Auschwitz concentration camp. When the plan to work Soviet prisoners fell through, the Nazis transferred Jews, communists, gypsies, and other minority populations to the camp. The prisoners of Auschwitz who were able to work were shipped to 30 different companies. One of the companies was the vast Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation. Quote, "Nobody's made the connection before between Consolidated Silesian Steel Corporation, Auschwitz, and Prescott Bush," John Loftus told Clamor. Again, that's the magazine that originally published this. Quote, "That was the reason why Auschwitz was built there. The coal deposits could be processed into either coal or additives for aviation gasoline." Unquote. Even though Thyssen and Fleek's Consolidated Steel was in their possession, Hitler's invasions across Europe spooked them, bringing back memories of World War I. Thyssen and Fleek sold Consolidated Steel to Union Banking Corporation. Under the complete control of Harriman and management of Bush, the company became Silesian American Corporation, which in turn became part of UBC and Harriman's portfolio of 15 corporations. Thyssen quickly moved to Switzerland and later France to hide from the terror about to be unleashed by the Nazi war machine that he had helped to build. A portion of the slave labor force in Poland, quote, was managed by Prescott Bush, unquote, according to a Dutch intelligence agent. In 1941, slave labor had become the lifeblood of the Nazi war machine. The resources of Poland's rich steel and coal field played an essential part in Hitler's invasion of Europe. According to Charles Higham, author of Trading with the Enemy, Hitler and the Fraternity of American Businessmen, quote, not only sought a continuing alliance of interest for the duration of World War II, but supported the idea of a negotiated peace with Germany that would bar any reorganization of Europe along liberal lines. It would leave as its residue a police state that would place the fraternity in post-war possession of financial, industrial, and political autonomy. And skipping down still more, the Union Banking Corporation books also revealed the myriad of money and holding companies funneled from the Thyssen's and the government realized UBC was just the tip of the iceberg. On November 17, 1942, the U.S. government also took over the Silesian American Corporation, but did not prosecute Bush for the reasons Higham had noted earlier. The companies were allowed to operate within the government alien property custodian office with a catch: no aiding the Nazis. In 1943, while still owning his stock, Prescott Bush resigned from UBC and even helped raise money for dozens of war-related causes as chairman of the National War Fund. And then talking more about the post-war sale of stock. By 1948, Fritz Thyssen's On February 8, 1951, Fritz Thyssen died bitterly in Argentina at the age of 78. Thyssen was angry at the way he was treated by Europe after the war and how history would remember him as Hitler's most important and prominent financier. When Thyssen died, the alien property custodian released the assets of the Union Banking Corporation to Brown Brothers Harriman. The remaining stockholders cashed in their stocks and quietly liquidated the rest of UBC's blood money. Prescott Bush received $1.5 million for his share in UBC. That money enabled Bush to help his son, George Herbert Walker Bush, to set up his first royalty firm, Overby Development Company, that same year. It was also helpful when Prescott Bush left the business world to enter the public arena in 1952 with a successful senatorial campaign in Connecticut. On October 8, 1972, Prescott Bush died of cancer and his will was enacted soon after. In 1980, when George H.W. Bush was elected vice president, he placed his family inheritance in a blind trust. So again, noting the Silesian American Corporation and its link to the Auschwitz slave labor pool, yet another of the interesting aspects of the Bush-Thyssen holdings on behalf of the Third Reich. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record, program number 370, Dutch Treat. More on the Thyssen, Bush, Bourne-Mesa connection. This is being recorded on July 29th of 2002. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.